Hello and welcome to the MFC podcast. Tonight, myself, Jay and Buster, I'm delighted to welcome along regular and possibly the fourth member of the podcast, Joe McKelvey. Thanks for joining us, guys.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Oh, thank you.
Well, a fantastic victory on Saturday, a 4-2 win over Hamilton Accies. The main man on the occasion was Louis Moult. We scored all four goals in the win, Jay. It was a very entertaining game. Perhaps we weren't comfortable even at 3-0 or 4-1, but we've got to be very satisfied with our afternoon's work.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you had obviously mentioned that up at Dingwall when Moult came off the bench, there was a bit of a buzz, and I think we might have mentioned last week the idea of just that kind of feeling, almost like a new signing or that kind of buzz, because we know what he brings to the team, we know what he can do on the park. We've clearly missed him, particularly that home game against Dundee. I don't think any of us were quite prepared for just, you know, how big an impact he would have. You're right, I think there was obviously some negatives in the game in terms of conceding two goals. It could possibly have been a wee bit more if Accies had been a wee bit more clinical in front of goal. Could have been a lot, you know, dodgier going into the latter stages had Accies taken a couple of their chances. Overall, you've got to be happy. I think it was a carbon copy of a 2007 Matt McGee team. We absolutely destroyed them in the opening half hour, which is something that we used to do in McGee's first spell. But again, just like McGee's first spell, we then take the foot off the gas a little bit, start to sit back, and Accies managed to punish us. The first goal in particular, what a finish by Ali Crawford. So overall, you can't fault anything about the performance, I don't think. I think, you know, if you want to be pedantic and pick apart bits and pieces, but it was a local derby against a team that has often, you know, managed to get the win against us even when they've not been playing particularly well. And overall, you've got to be really pleased. And I think there's a lot more positives than negatives to take out of the game going forward.
Welcome back, Buster. You were at the game on Saturday and you must have been very impressed, having missed a few weeks of Motherwell games, how impressively we started the game. And to be honest, the second half, you knew that the first goal would be so crucial. We got the better of Accies and we got that fourth goal. And I think that we'll look back in this game as perhaps a turning point in our season.
Well, as you say, you know, I'd missed a few games, holiday, weddings, things like that. I'd seen the results, and to be honest with you, because I'd seen the results, I didn't even really watch the highlights. I put them on and didn't pay attention. But as Jay said as well, you know, the first half hour of that game was, you know, looking back nearly 10 years, it was, you know, I don't know how we can go for what I heard you say, you know, pretty dire matches at times to, you know, that sort of explosive first half hour. It was fantastic. And to see somebody, to see how badly we miss somebody like Louis Moult is pretty unreal, to be honest with you. You know, Mark McGee said it as well in his post-match interview. If we'd maybe had him in about the box against, you know, maybe even some or Rangers in the, you know, the first League Cup game, you know, it could have been dead in the first half hour then as well. But it was a very impressive performance in the first, you know, the first half hour, as you say. As we lost I think the goal we lost was pretty poor at points. There was a poor header. Crawford picked up the ball, he passed it inside, two players followed the ball, got it back, and to be fair, as Jay said as well, the finish was absolutely fantastic, right in the corner. Couldn't fault the goalkeeper there, but I think he got a bit too much space. As you say, we got a good fourth goal. Then we lost another good goal, actually a good finish again by Ali Crawford, but it was a bit worrying how we changed the shape and sort of let them come on to us a bit again. Fair dues, you know, we were three goals up, but it was a bit worrying how content we were just to let them sort of come at us, gave them the ball and let them run at us. But as you say, if we won every game like that 4-2, you know, we'll be more than happy. Turning in the season, possibly. As I say, you know, I didn't really catch much of the last couple of games due to being away and stuff like that, but hopefully, as I say, you know, the rest of the season will be a bit like that.
Joe, tempo's a pretty good word to kind of describe the game, and that was a bit of an issue for me. At 3-0 up, you should be cruising a game, particularly after 20 odd minutes, but we never seemed particularly comfortable. Aki's got the goal in the first half, then they hit the post from a free kick, a fantastic free kick from Crawford, who is an excellent player. We'll maybe talk about him a bit more over the course, but even having a 3-goal advantage in two occasions of the game, we never looked totally comfortable with our lead, and we had to really work for it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, had we gone into the break 3-0 up, I think it would have been a different look at the second half. I mean, I can remember speaking to you at half time and you saying, it would be good if we're 3 or 4 up with half an hour ago and we can maybe give somebody like Fadi a cameo to come on and kind of, at that point we were kind of talking about kind of enjoying the game or whatever, but then Aki scoring to make it 3-1 kind of put a different slant in the start of the second half, and albeit we overcame that slant by winning the penalty and getting a 3-goal advantage restored. But after that, when they scored their second, and then I think Hennigan had one where he cleared it off the line, and there was a couple of frantic moments. And you think to yourself, he's just, no matter how well we start the game from our weekend, just never seem to be comfortable. But as I say, it was a great win, so happy with that, and hopefully kick on from there.
Jay, the performance as a whole was very, very good and very, very comfortable. I think that what impressed me was the home debut of Ryan Bowman, who came into the team against Ross County the previous week, and he didn't really look like he had an idea of where he was playing, but on Saturday he played a big role. He won the penalty for the fourth goal. He had a wee bit of a scrap with Louis Moult to try and take it, but I kind of got where Mark McGee was saying in his post-match that Louis Moult's a penalty taker. He had already scored 3 goals, so it would have done him no harm to miss the penalty, and then obviously he scored it, whereas Ryan Bowman was trying to get off the mark. Yeah, of course he was keen to take it and try and convert his first goal in his home debut, but it was a sensible decision then. But it was an excellent performance from the new man, and it definitely gives us reason. We talked last week about the potency and the excitement that we've got in attacking options. The front three of McDonald, Bowman and Moult looked very, very good on Saturday.
Yeah, definitely. I was really impressed with Bowman, because obviously, I think, you know, when you sign a player from a team like Gateshead, I know that obviously Scottish football gets a bad rap down south in terms of its level, but, you know, it's a step up to come up here. Don't know too much about the guy. You obviously, you know, didn't have great praise for him after the game in Dingwall. Not that you were particularly negative about him, but you just didn't really...
I think that's the case. I think we were kind of a bit undecided. It was a difficult game to judge him on.
Yeah, so he just didn't really seem to impose himself in the game. So it was, you know, it would be interesting to see. It was obviously going to be interesting to see just how he fitted in, particularly with this idea that we were now moving to the kind of out and out Mark McGee 4-3-3, because it's not a system that all players, you know, will be comfortable fitting into. But I thought he was fantastic. I think if that is going to be our front three going forward, I think it's got a lot of potential there. Three very different footballers. I think Bowman in particular looks as though he could be a real handful for defenders. He was getting into their faces, you know, winning headers. He obviously won the flick on for Louis Moult's first goal. And I think he's just he'll be a big, big asset going forward. So a really good start. In terms of the penalty, I can kind of see both sides. I think that there'd be something wrong. I think he would be... you'd find it quite weird if Bowman hadn't picked up the ball and demanded to take the penalty. But you're right, if you have a penalty taker, it doesn't matter if Louis Moult scored 1 goal or 20 goals over the course of the game. If he's a penalty taker, he takes the penalty, and it's as simple as that. But yeah, I think all over the park there were good performances. Clay, for me, is really coming into a game in the middle of the park. Caton, again, was absolutely different class. And I think when you're coming away from a game that your striker has scored 4 goals, and yet you can still pick out a good number of players who really were top class and who possibly could have been in for a shout of man of the match if Moult hadn't managed to score 4, I think, you know, that is symptomatic of what was a good performance.
Joe, a wee bit of a negative, in fact a massive negative, was the behaviour of Dougie Emery on Saturday. You were sitting very close to me and his petulant blast of the ball into the crowd. I can only assume that he was aiming at a group of guys that were giving him a very hard time at the front of the stand, and some of the chants definitely were out of order, but Dougie Emery's conduct to blast the ball into a section where there was a lot of kids, my 4-year-old daughter sitting beside me, she didn't know very much about it because she's more interested in talking to her pals than actually watching the football, but that's a different story. But the fact that it broke the seat beside us, it was a dangerous thing to do, and I've been quite disappointed by the response from Mackies, who said that, oh, Dougie was just clearing his lines. He's done an interview with the Press Association where he said that, what else was I meant to do? For me, he actually put his foot on the ball and blittered it into the section of Muller supporters. It was a brain-dead thing to do. He's clearly got a bad attitude. He's not a very popular figure amongst Muller supporters. He's not a very popular figure amongst football supporters. Arsehole is possibly the best word to describe him.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't have put that better myself there. One thing that also struck me above it is his unprofessional nature, is he's obviously, he's booted a ball a group of fans. It's totally intentional, there's absolutely no doubt about it. As you say, we were both sitting very near it. You could see the venom in his face as he went to do it. But, I mean, for me, the batch of the shouts at Dougie Emery, I'm not excusing them, they weren't appropriate, they weren't right. But the main batch of them probably came from higher up the stand from where we were sitting on Saturday. So it's pretty cowardly that he chose to do it in the first section, which, as you say, visibly did have a lot of kids sitting in it. I mean, when the chants were going on up the other end of the park, you didn't see him put his foot on the ball and rattle it into the crowd. And another thing was, if he was clearing his lines to give Motherwell a shy, when you're getting beat 4-2, would it not make more sense to just roll the ball out of play so play restarted quicker, so you'd more time to get up the park and score another goal, if you like? So it's just, I mean, it's bewildering, to be honest, that both that Dougie Emery would be willing to do that and how little's been said after it. I mean, I think Motherwell should have come out and condemned him for it, as should have Aki's, but he seems to have got away with it, which, I mean, is probably quite a difficult thing to prove that he's done anything wrong, because essentially all he did was, when the ball was in play, kick it out of play. But, I mean, I think it's non-professionalism from it's just absolutely staggering.
I think the issue here is, though, again, don't be wrong, I was at the other side of the park, and you can still see, you know, he turned around and kicked it into the stand as hard as he could. But I think the issue is that, fortunately, it didn't melt MD in the face. You only hear of these things when, you know, a woman gets a broken nose, or, you know, it hits a wane and the wane's upset. You know, so fortunately, it didn't actually hit MD. Don't be wrong, I understand it was close to his, but that's how there's no much being made of it. You know, he's turned around and says, I was clearing the lines, then, you know, what was I supposed to do? Hamilton have said, well, you know, he's putting the ball out. And again, I don't even know if Motherwell even have to recognise it, or would have to even say it, but the issue is that, or the non-issue is that he didn't actually hit MD. And as bad as I know, as you say, it was a couple of seats away from Penny. If it melted Penny in the face, you'd need to hear a lot more about it than, you know, just at breaking a seat.
No. And it didn't hit anyone because people ducked. that was the reason it didn't hit anybody. It wasn't as if everybody just sat still. It was a case of when the ball came, even I did. I mean, I had Perry was sitting to the left of me, and Joe Smith's kid Cammy was sitting to the right of me. And you think I might have just stood still and potentially took the hit, but no, as soon as the ball came near me, my head was down on my knees as well. So the reason it didn't hit anybody was because everybody ducked.
The ball was hit with a ridiculous amount of ferocity. It takes a fair bit. Even I wouldn't imagine the stand seats are the most sturgid of things, but it broke very clearly right down the middle of the seat. It turned around, and then after that he nodded as kind of acknowledgement of what he had done. It was just, for me, it was a scumbag move. I didn't realise how good at the hurdles I was, because I was about five rows in front giving him dog's abuse for what he had done, because it just seemed so reckless and so deliberate, that a really poor move. And I do believe, I think you're right, Joe, that Muddle should have made more of it. BBC Alba didn't cover the incident either. If this was a Rangers-Celtic game or any game involving the so-called bigger teams, this would definitely be covered.
I don't know about that. I mean, I'm trying to think back to when Giovanni Van Bronckhorst, you know, levelled the ball off a guy's face in the East Stand.
A very public apology about that, though.
I can't quite remember, but the issue we've got here is the fact that, as Joe said, it can't be proven. There is absolutely no way. I agree with what yous are saying. I mean, I was sitting with Buster up the other end of the stand, and you could see from there that it was deliberate. It says a lot about him as a person. You know, I saw the tweets from the Hamilton Accies Twitter account and about how, you know, we're sitting with Dougie now and he says it wasn't intentional, etc. At the end of the day, if it was a rush of blood to the head and he's pissed off with people shouting at him and stuff, then fair enough. You know, I think that football fans get far too easy annoyed with some of the abuse they dish out with players, and then they spit the dummy when it's thrown back in their faces. So if he'd said, look, I get carried away, you know, I'm sorry, then fair enough. It says a lot more about him, the fact that he's trying to, you know, continue this charade that it was an accident. The problem is, though, that he's entirely within his rights to do so. Nobody can prove that it was deliberate. So I think that it's all very well, you know, having been near the incident and being, you know, angry about it because the ball's narrowly hit Penny narrowly missed Penny, sorry, and broke the seat, etc. But I think to actually, in reality, if Motherwell were to come out and slate a professional football player who doesn't accept that he did it deliberately, then it would make our club look stupid, in my opinion. I don't think Mother will have any needs to get involved in it. We all saw it. Dougie Imrie, it says a lot more about him than anybody else, the fact that he's not owned up to it. But there is no way in a million years that Motherwell Football Club are going to put out a statement condemning a player for clearing these lines, because that is essentially what we have to accept it as. Because although we know that it was intentional, if Dougie Imrie maintains that he was clearing these lines, then there is absolutely nothing we can do about that.
No, I absolutely cannot agree with that in the slightest. The fact that that's your paying customers that come week in, week out, and a guy, if he had done something like that in the street, he was very lucky that someone didn't run in the park and lamp him for his behaviour. It was despicable.
The issue you've got with that, you can't say things like, oh, if that happened in the street, because Dougie Imrie's not going to be next to the M8 clearing his lines. We've got a problem here. Dougie Imrie was clearing his lines. Now, that's indisputable. Now, you can then reason the fact, or you could then argue that, okay, he deliberately did it in a fashion that was designed to hurt somebody or whatever, but there is no way Motherwell Football Club can come out and slate a player who is saying that. I mean, it doesn't reflect well on the club whatsoever, and I think to expect our club to come out, I mean, where do you draw the line if next week, you know, Stephen Lawless does genuinely clear his lines and it happens to hit someone in the face? Do we then come out and say, oh, well, he meant it as well? It's a very slippery slope. The club cannot come out and pass comment on that. I think it's a lying.
It's a blatant lying as well to actually make a statement and trying to justify his actions. What he should have done is he should have held his hands up and said that the red mist descended and I took it over the score. Instead, he made up an absolute cock and bull story after the whole situation, where he'd spoken to the broadcast press and said that he was just clearing his lines and what was I meant to do? It was a bit of scumbag behaviour, and he really should be taken to task for it.
I am not disagreeing with that. I'm not disagreeing with that. It's like I've already said that, you know, it says a lot about him, the fact that even in the aftermath, he couldn't just say, yeah, I got a rush of blood to the head, I'm sorry about it. You know, he should have said that, but he didn't. And it can't be proven. You cannot prove that Dougie Imrie deliberately attempted to hurt someone with the ball. It can't be proven. So if it can't be proven, you cannot come out and have Motherwell Football Club release a statement slating another professional footballer. for something that they maintain they didn't do.
Well, there's a bit of precedent for this, though, because Stevie Kirk was charged with hitting a woman at Tynecastle in 1988, so there's clearly a previous for this sort of thing. I can remember Kevin Toyle being on the podcast and saying he hit a pregnant woman in the Davy Cooper stand with a ball. Of course, you're a...
Doogie, I mean, he didn't hit anybody.
You're a punter at the football. It could happen, and accidents do happen, but this wasn't an accident. This was a reckless act of absolute thuggery, and really, Doogie Emery is very, very lucky that nothing more has come of this.
What I will say is, if you look at it probably from a more rational point of view, that, yeah, I'll kind of say 5 minutes ago, I know it might sound like a big mad reversing opinion, but I said 5 minutes ago Motherwell should have come out and said something about it. I mean, I've probably listened to Jay's point and taken on board what he says is very, very valid. But I mean, what I think should be happening is he should definitely be faced with internal talks from Hamilton Accies, A, because of his behaviour, and B, because of the security threat. Because let's face it, there are some nutters that support Motherwell, and a few that I wouldn't have put past trying to run on the park and lamp them.
Well, that's it. There's no way that in the heat of the moment people do stupid things. There was no damage done to anyone. The ball missed. To be fair, it was closer to me than it was my daughter. But I get very, very annoyed about it. There was no danger I was going to run in the park and try and lamp Doogie Emery. But if it had maybe happened to the wrong person, it could have been more a heated situation. And that's basically my point. I think the aftermath as well, whereas I didn't actually kind of ask for a response from Hamilton Accies, they did that off their own back. But then to hear a good friend of mine saying that it was completely remorseless and everything else about the whole situation, that's very annoying to hear. And to be honest, I think the kind of lesson learned here is Doogie Emery's still a wee fanny, which is basically the grand sum of it. But there's no real breaking news there. But
it's very rare I judge a professional footballer based on his demeanour on the football pitch. But I make an exception where Doogie Emery's concerned.
Yeah, I did enjoy him lying on the pitch at the end of the game, pulling out the paper from below his shin pads and throwing his shin pads in there and everything else. He took a proper bitch fit, shall we say. Not a very good loser, but the thing is, we can't condone our own supporters, the ones that are standing at the front of the stand and abusing people's parents and everything else. That's not on either. Don't get me wrong, it's... You can have a wee snigger about things like that and everything else, but it is taking things over the score. And I guess he's possibly got a bit of a reason to react, but you've got to react in the right manner.
Again, I think there's some points being made in both sides here that are, you know, are very valid. But I think the thing is, as Jay says, it can't be proved. You know, as I've said, it didn't actually hit MD. As you said, it was stupid and it was petulant. He's an arsehole, basically. But where you can't put a fence up in front of the stands. You know, where do you draw the line on these sort of things? Whether it's deliberate or no, you know, there is a risk that you will get hit with the ball. You know, I've had the ball booted at me a couple of times just for shouting at people, but that's just what happens. You know, I don't want to say that's just what happens, because it's no right that he would deliberately turn and do that. Then I think we have to just basically draw a line on this, and you know. They finish with a sentence that we all know Doogie Emery is an arsehole, and that's the end of it, basically.
Jay, we'll move on from that, and I guess after four games without a win, it was a very important 3 points as well, wasn't it? We now sit 6 games, 2 wins, 2 losses and 2 draws. The kind of outlook going forward is a good bit more positive after that victory.
Yeah, I mean, we've said a couple of times, particularly before the Dundee game, and then last week when we were, you know, talking about the Accies game, those are the games at Fir Park that if you've got any aspirations of being top six this season, which I think we've got every right to aim for that, those are the games that you need to be taking 3 points from. The Dundee game was obviously disappointing, not just because of the result, but also it was quite a lacklustre, slow-paced performance. Pretty much the exact opposite from, you know, the opening half hour on Saturday. So you're right. I think if we, not that it was expected. I said before the game that I thought that we were going to win the game by a couple of clear goals. But you need to do that if you're going to, you know, want to be chapping the door of Europe or at the very least aiming for top six. Then we need to beat Accies, we need to beat Dundee. I think we need to beat, or at least take a draw with Fir Hill on Saturday coming. So it's easy to kind of get into this habit of sort of saying, well, it's quite early on in the season, you know, there's plenty of football to be played. But these are the games that, you know, mark out where you're going to be for the remainder of the season, whether you're going to be in a relegation zone, whether you're going to be challenging for Europe. You need to start getting points on the board. So if we can use the momentum and the feel-good factor that's been generated from it to go forward and to, you know, beat Thistle, maybe, you know, get a point against Hearts, then, yeah, there's absolutely no reason why we can't go from strength to strength.
Looking ahead, Buster, the next fixture throws up a trip to Fir Hill, which has been a difficult place to go in recent times. Thistle will go into the game bottom of the table, which was quite a surprising situation given they won their opening game against Inverness. Everything seemed very positive there, but they've not been able to kick on. And it's another game that we should be expecting to take something from, whether it be a win or even just a point. That would just let us kind of continue that momentum. The week after that, we've got Hearts at home and then the international break. So we've got a chance to push on from that good victory on Saturday.
Yeah, I think that, as you say, going forward, we have got a couple of decent fixtures coming up. Fir Hill has never been an easy place to go for us, so I think right away, you know, I would take a draw there and then at that one. As you say, Partick Thistle are currently bottom of the league, but I think we're still at we obviously are still at a very early part of the season, so I don't think you can really judge them on that, to be fair. But again, I've not really seen much of them other than the odd highlight. So I was looking forward to going to the football on Saturday as well until I realised I was working. So I'm still trying to wang all the afternoon off there at least so I can maybe go along. But I'm looking forward to at least sitting and working, watching the BBC.
Joe, it's a difficult fixture, isn't it? But we've got every right to go in with a bit of confidence. And when you look at particularly the attacking side of the game, I'm not 100% convinced that our defensive side of the game is that solid at the moment. But in the attacking sense, we should go into every game expecting that we can score two or three goals. So if we can keep them out at the other end, then we've got every chance of going on and claiming the 3 points.
Absolutely. I mean, as you touched on earlier, I thought Bowman had a very impressive game on Saturday, and it looks like almost as if he might be the player that was described as Jacob Blyth at the start of the season. He looks like he seemed to be a strong player. He seemed to be able to, was running in behind quite well, and he actually, like, he made three emotes, four goals. If you think he had the flick on for the first, they won the penalty, and then I think it was the third goal, Moult had the rebound from Bowman's shot. So I think those two up with McDonald should be a match for anyone to begin with, and I think it is really important in the two games before the international break that we do kind of go out into both of them really looking for the wins, because the table looks, you know, a lot rosier after 3 points on Saturday, but that's just kind of the way the table is at this stage of the season, but particularly this year, because, I mean, we are sitting sixth just now in 8 points, but Partick that are bottom in fourth could have caught us by the international break. So really important that we take Saturday's win as a bit of momentum and try and go there and build on it.
Jay, the last two visits to Fir Hill have been particularly disappointing. The 2-0 game under Ian Barraclough, where we we went in with a bit of expectation that we were going to avoid that playoff, which didn't work out too badly for us. But last season, the Tuesday night at Firhill, one of the worst games I can remember in recent history, to be honest. The 1-0 defeat with the late goal from Stephen Lawless. It's got to be an improved performance. We're going to bring a good support on Saturday. We've got a bit of momentum. Basically, the point I'm trying to make is it's got to be more of the same and not revert to type like we have it at Firhill in recent time.
No, absolutely. I mean, the two games you talk about, I'd kind of managed to put the Ian Barraclough one out of my mind, so thanks for that. But you know, that was the perfect example for folk to go down the old cliched argument about every time we get a big crowd we capitulate, and then obviously that 1-0 game, you know, in the aftermath of which you had Lionel Ainsworth in tears and things like that. It was not a good, you know, both of those games were in very down moments, being a Motherwell fan in the last year or two. But you're right, we can go in with a lot more positivity this time, a lot more optimism, and we've got, you know, a bit of momentum. You can't go out and dismantle a team in the first half hour and not look to take that forward. I think it's all very well to look at Firhill as a difficult place to go and say, well, in the past we've kind of, you know, been shaky there. But at the end of the day, Mark McGee, as soon as we'd signed Ryan Bowman, said that he was pleased because it now meant that we could play his preferred 4-3-3. We saw exactly that, probably a lot sooner than I expected. I thought that we would probably build to the old Mark McGee side of coming out and trying to blitz teams in the opening stages, but I didn't quite expect it, you know, so soon. So I don't see any reason why we need to go and change that. You look at some of the games, you know, away from home, with Mark McGee, you know, when we were first exposed to this, you know, fantastic opening stages of games, you know, St Mirren away springs to mind with Stephen McGarry scoring on the first day of the season. I mean, there's not any, I wouldn't say there's any evidence from the past that Mark McGee kind of sidelines this system or this way of playing when we go away. So I think that, you know, we're playing against, as you know, has been rightfully mentioned, it is maybe a wee bit too early to judge Partick Thistle based on being bottom of the table, but there's no reason why we should look at Saturday and not go out with the exact same sort of game plan as we had against Accies. Because, you know, if we do the same, if we start with that tempo, there are very few teams in the league who can cope with that. Because by the time they've got a handle on the game and by the time they've settled into the match, if we're already 2-3 goals ahead, then they're playing catch-up. So I would like to see us do exactly the same. I mean, assuming there's no injuries, there's no need to change the team at all, I would just go into the game and just tell the players to do exactly what they did in the opening stages of Saturday's game.
Buster, we've got to feel excited about the kind of strength and depth we've got. We kind of maybe bemoaned the size of the squad and that we seemed a bit short on strikers or midfielders, but now It's amazing what a win does, to be honest, because we suddenly turn into a team where you've got guys on the bench that can come on and make an impact. I'm talking like the guys of James McFadden, Dom Thomas, even Jacob Blythe was not seen very much of, but guys that will be looking to get their chance and their opportunity to make an impact. So we're looking good at the moment, and you've kind of got to fancy that coming up against a Partick Thistle side that are short in confidence, that we should be going there as big favourites and to make a mark almost.
Yeah, no, as Jay says, you know, I think we've got to, if that's the way we're going to play for now on that sort of early blitz that we've seen again 9-10 years ago, we've got to stick to that. I think you said as well, defensively, I'm not too convinced by us defensively as of yet. As you say, we've got a good squad there. You know, I've not seen any of them, but Mark McGee seems to talk him up a wee bit. Lee Lucas, you know, meant to be pretty good in the ball. You know, I think he's thinking of him being the link-up between the midfield and the forwards. Blythe, as you say, Craig Clay, although he's playing, he's really coming on to a game. We still like to see the young Slavic boy from West Ham, Dom Thomas, James McFadden, even at the unders tonight, you know, guys like Ross McLean, who, for what I read on Twitter, had a good game at the unders. I still think, though, we're, as you say, we're a bit weak defensively, especially
I don't think we've got much support, if any, in the fullback areas. Joe Chalmers, you know, he's been playing pretty decent recently. Got himself a call up. Whether or not, you know, you thought it was deserved, you can argue amongst yourselves. But you know, he's somebody's noticed that he's been doing not too bad. But I still think we're a wee bit shaky at the back. I'm not sure about either of the goalkeepers, to be honest with you. You know, we spoke about Craig Sampson and his tendency to sort of palm the ball back into the middle of the goals, like he's me putting seven asides. But I don't really know much at all about Dean Brill. But as you say, we have actually got quite a decent sized squad compared to maybe how it was a couple of weeks ago. And I was looking at it thinking, you know, we're maybe a player or two short here and there, but it's a decent sized squad. And as you says, we've got nothing to fear at Partick Thistle. Hopefully their confidence is going to be pretty low, and after a big win like that on Saturday, you know, we've got to come out all guns blazing again.
What I find funny about our squad just now is, as you were saying there about us maybe being a bit weaker defensively this season, is the past 4 or 5 years you could see me look at a Motherwell squad and pick out about 7 or 8 players that could play right back. And I was saying to myself at the weekend, in the summer we signed Tate, fair enough, but we get rid of Josh Law, we get rid of Louis Lang in loan, then we get rid of Luke Watt in loan. It's the first time we've ever had a squad without a major surplus of right backs for years.
Yeah, I thought he had a very tough time against Dougie Embry as well on Saturday, Tate. It wasn't a very good matchup for him. He was taking on head to head, and I think he lost the battle between the two of them. I think Dougie Embry had a lot of joy down that right hand side.
I think he reminds me a lot of Alan Hutton and the fact that his strength seems to be going forward. And I've seen him quite a few times get caught out defensively, like leaving big gaps in behind. A couple of times he's lost personal battles out there, it looks like. And even the first goal on Saturday, I thought he could have done a lot better. So I remain to be convinced by him. I mean, it's a 3-year deal, and hopefully he's just finding his feet and he'll come good in time.
Just to go back to Saturday as well, there, as you says, Joe, you said it there, he'd basically a free header at one point, and he headed it straight to, I think it was Ali Crawford, which basically led to their first goal. On Saturday, though, as you say, against Dougie Emery, I thought Dougie Emery was coming for a lot deeper. You know, he was almost playing left wing back. Don't get me wrong, you know, he should maybe have been out a wee bit quicker. He seemed to tuck in very, very narrow at times, but I think he was getting absolutely no help whatsoever for the midfield as well. You know, he was maybe following somebody in, and Dougie Emery was just left standing there. I don't think on Saturday, especially with Hamilton maybe playing, as I say, like they looked as if they were maybe playing, you know, 3 centre-halves and 2 wing-backs. I don't think our narrow shape really helped the fullbacks on Saturday, especially against Dougie Emery's maybe one of Hamilton's better players. So especially when, you know, he was going to get the ball, Richard Tate seemed to be tucked in very, very narrow at times. And as you say, to be convinced of him defensively is fair enough, but I don't think he got much help on Saturday for MD and the team in midfield.
Oh, I can't really disagree with that. I think that we're perhaps, as we're quite often guilty of, when you've had a win and you've not really got that many negatives to talk about, you maybe search for kind of a few flaws in the performance. And there's a point I actually turned to Joe, and I think we thought at the time it was Craig Clay that headed the ball off the line, but what an incredible goal line clearance from Ben Hennigan when at 4-2, which perhaps if it went to a goal in it, he would have really been kind of worried whether we'd managed to claim all 3 points. So, yeah, kind of highs and lows there. But we'll go and talk about a few kind of changes at the football club this week, and the appointment of a head of fan engagement, which I think is quite a strange move for me, as far as I'm concerned. It kind of says a lot about football that we've actually got to employ someone that is able to understand the football fans, particularly as a fan-owned football club. I can't really get my head around it. the guy that's come in is Ryan Murant or Murant. He's got a fair pedigree in doing this sort of thing. Jay, I noticed as soon as he was appointed, you thought it would be a positive thing. For me, I think it's completely the job that the Welsh Society should be doing. They've got over 1,000 paying members. They should absolutely know what the fans want, what the fans like. For me, it's a wasted wage. I've kind of invited him onto the podcast, and he is going to come on in the next couple of weeks when he's settled into his role. But I'm struggling to get my head around this one.
Well, 2 points. Firstly, on the Welsh Society, the idea that they should be doing that role, I completely agree. The issue for me, as I've said time and time again, is that the Welsh Society allowed a lot of excitement and a lot of interest about fan ownership to just completely dissipate. They've bored people to tears, they've made people indifferent. So when the fan ownership first came about, perhaps because I'm, you know, heavily involved in politics and things like that, but I saw quite a good opportunity for quite a political setup, quite a democratic setup, where people are perhaps elected to the Welsh Society Board based on, you know, their vision and their ideas, and the fans take an interest in that, and there's, you know, genuine you know, debate about who you want on the board, because they are then going to champion your ideas, or, you know, you elect someone because they have a manifesto, if you like, that you like. So I agree. I think that the Welsh Society should be a platform for, you know, putting forward what the fans want. But the problem is, it's all very well to say that, but, you know, we've spoke since the beginning of the podcast about how poor the Welsh Society's been at that. So to suddenly expect that the Welsh Society's going to do it, I think, is really misguided. I don't think I would say that I see the appointment as necessarily a positive one. I think all I mean is it could be potentially positive. I'm certainly not going to, you know, jump to a conclusion at the moment that it's a wasted wage. I think that we've been on the podcast many times over the last year or so, talking about the likes of Glasgow Warriors, talking about the Glasgow Rocks, talking in particular about Brayhead Clan, and about how they engage fans, about how they make it about the whole match day experience. We've talked at length about how the match day experience for football fans in general and Motherwell fans is incredibly poor, about the way they're treated, about, you know, pricing the things, you know, a long list of stuff that we've slated. So I think to then suddenly turn around when the club appear to do something about it, or to put, you know, something in place to do something about it, to completely dismiss it from the off, I think is, you know, it's quite a poor move, because, I mean, the guy, as far as I remember, according to the statement that was released when he joined, the guy had his first day at work today. So the fact that he did the 9-to-5 for one day and suddenly, well, you know, it's a wasted wage, I just find bizarre. I don't understand that at all. At the very least, we should at least give him a chance to prove why he's a, you know, apparently a multi-award winning fan engagement officer, or whatever his job title is. It remains to be seen what he'll do. I don't know what his remit is. I don't think any of you guys know what his remit actually is. But at the end of the day, we have been quite critical about the fan, you know, that fan engagement, the lack of it. We've been critical about the match day experience and how poor it can be. We've talked about the competition elsewhere at the likes of Brayhead Clan, and how over time more and more football fans will probably go towards that type of entertainment because they treat the fans properly and give them a good match day experience. So if we're employing someone to tackle those issues, then I don't see why it should be automatically assumed that it's a negative.
Well, okay, I'll kind of have my right to reply there, and just kind of the whole situation where I think we've got enough staff at the club that understand the football club. This is a man that's come from down south and won't have much of an understanding of the football club at this current point in time. You've got guys like Flo that work there and has been on our side of the fence, where he's been there as a fan, a very passionate guy. We won't disrespect the job that Alan does at the football club. He's done a fantastic job. He's worked his way up, and deservedly so. But you can see it from our side of the defence. I don't think for a second the whole Rangers thing and the fact that our own fans were kept in after the game were given a fair right of a passage or a right of hearing for that situation. I think that what the club should have been doing is dealing with issues that were there, rather than employing someone else to deal with it. It's strange for me, and I think in a time where money is clearly tight, we're quite often release statements that we've not got enough money to do A, B and C, then we should be watching in the budget. Yeah, albeit we might have another 25 grand to 30 grand a year to employ someone that's got a proven track record down south. But I don't really understand it. We've got a head of marketing, we've got a head of commercial operations. So it's a strange one for me. And I'm not saying that it's going to be a failure or anything else, but I'm just saying in his first day of work or his 100th day of work, it doesn't make any difference to me. He has to prove himself to us rather than us being giving him the benefit of the doubt, as far as I'm concerned anyway.
But I don't think anybody's disagreed with that. I mean, you know, nobody has suggested, I think any employee, whether they are a fan engagement officer, a goalkeeper, you know, a new manager, that they have to, you know, prove themselves to the fans. I think there's a difference between allowing him the chance to prove himself and describing him as a wasted wage when he's one day into the job. A couple of points on what you were saying there. I mean, firstly, the idea that we have enough staff at the club who are familiar with being a Motherwell fan and familiar with the club, the fact that you bring up what happened at the Rangers game would say to me that perhaps we don't have, you know, the capable people, because at the end of the day, if we already had people who are capable of understanding what the fans want, then things like that wouldn't have happened in the first place. Secondly, sometimes in these situations, it is good to have someone who isn't familiar with the football club. It's good to have someone who comes in from the outside and is dealing with both the club and the fans with a clean slate, doesn't have any, you know, preconceptions, doesn't have any, you know, loyalties or bias one way or another, isn't perhaps, you know, trying to, you know, get certain things pushed through on behalf of you know, folk at the club or whatever. You know, if you get someone from down south who is just interested in engaging with the fans the same way as he seems to have done at other clubs, then I don't have any issues with that. And in terms of actually paying for his wages, presumably, if he's here for the long term, the plan might actually be that if his role is successful, as you would imagine the club hope it will be, then presumably the engagement of fans will lead to potentially higher attendances, potentially, you know, more fans putting their hands in their pockets for season tickets or for merchandise or whatever it is that, you know, his objectives are. If it's to engage more fans, then naturally that results in more money. And if he does a good job, then he'll pay for himself.
Right, okay, well, throwing it on its head then, is the Community Trust and the Well Society just an absolute dead rubber? Are they, because they're clearly not achieving the goals that they should be doing, they're not achieving fan engagement, there's actually a bit of apathy and resentment towards particularly the society just now. What roles have they got going forward, or is he going to have to kind of boost the profile of both the Community Trust and the Well Society going forward? Because I just think we've got so many kind of arms to the establishment and we're not really benefiting from any of them.
To be fair, I wouldn't lump the Community Trust in terms of fan engagement.
I don't know what the Community Trust are doing.
Oh no, I mean the Community Trust could certainly be better at blowing their own trumpet, and I think it's something that they really need to focus on. The Community Trust do some absolutely fantastic things, and I think that Motherwell fans should be genuinely proud of a lot of what the Community Trust does. And it's a fault on the Community Trust's part if Motherwell fans don't know about it. In terms of the Well Society, you know, I don't think you really need to start you know, a conversation on whether we think that the Well Society hasn't done things properly.
Well, to be fair, there's 2,000 words in the bookazine that's going to kind of go into good detail about that.
Oh no, I mean, yeah, I mean, my point has always been that I'm a supporter of fan ownership, but I think Well Society has failed time and time and time again. And at the end of the day, if it comes down to it, perhaps the Well Society was supposed to be that sort of liaison between the club and the fans. Perhaps it was supposed to be, you know, in place of the new guy that's in. And perhaps, you know, whether it was Alan Burrows, whether it was somebody else at the club, perhaps they've realised, look, the Well Society is a dead rubber. It might succeed in getting fan ownership, it might not, but it's not doing what we expected. So we need to go out and actually make it happen by bringing somebody else in.
Joe, Buster, have you got anything to kind of add to the whole subject? I know it's kind of one of these ones that me and Jay have went back and forward on for the last couple of days just discussing it, but Yes, I can see the positives, but there's certainly positive and negatives, isn't there?
I was interested to see what he had done at these previous clubs to be kind of termed the success, the major success that Alan Burrows has made him out to be upon his appointment. Like anyone else, I'll give it time to see whether his job does take off, whether we find it to be beneficial. I think what he has got is he's got a very tough task ahead of him, because to properly engage fans of Motherwell, I look back to incidents over the past couple of years that are fresh in our minds, and you look at being kept in at the end of the Rangers game, at the end of the start of the season there, and then you look at the times where the fans were kettled at St Mirren and things like that, and the club weren't really strong in their stances after that. And I've wondered if the result of him coming in as a fan engagement officer will mean that the club will take a stronger stance, if there is kind of someone almost, if you like, between the fans and the board and that kind of role, or whether it'll just be a role where, whether it was a nice idea, the guy had good plans, but unfortunately, because he's in an official role employed by Motherwell, whether he'll have to mind his P's and his Q's too much to actually have an impact in his role. I don't see how attendances are going to kind of differ as a result of him. I think we're kind of in a rut almost. I'd say that we're now at a point with Motherwell where we've got kind of a few thousand to our kind of hardcore regulars who would probably go regardless of what a fan engagement officer could offer them, and then other than that, you're probably talking about trying to convince people that are out of the loop of going to games to come back. So I tried to look at him when I read his appointment another day. I thought I would search for him in LinkedIn and see if I could see the periods of times it was at the clubs that he was mentioned at, to see if I wanted to kind of see if I could look online and see if there was a before and after of attendances during his tenure there, to see. Obviously that doesn't tell the full story of what a fan engagement officer should be, but I was kind of interested to see what, if any, difference there were in attendances. Obviously there's other things that could cause spikes, like forum, whatever else, but I'm just intrigued as to whether his role is going to be to try and have more people at Fir Park on a Saturday, or whether his role is going to be more acting as a buffer for those who are at Fir Park on a Saturday. It'll be interesting to see how it pans out. I, for one, I would say I'm probably slightly on the pessimistic side, but I'm willing to see how it pans out before I start casting any aspersions in the guy.
I hope your boss doesn't listen, Joe, because what your attempted research does tell me is that you've got far too much time on your hands.
I done it in the evening.
There has absolutely never been any doubts or aspersions about the fact that Joe has got too much time to be a statistician, that's for sure.
No, and we all appreciate it, except for when he's cheating at cap bingo, but we'll let that slide now. In regards to this guy, like yourselves, I know nothing about him. I don't even know really what he's going to be employed to do, but I'm bit of the thinking that give him a chance, see what's what, you know, see if we can notice any, see if there is any noticeable differences, you know, even in the small things, I suppose. But I don't know enough to have formed any sort of opinion on it, but I'm willing to give it a chance.
Yeah, I think that's a fairly rounded opinion when we have the man himself on in the podcast in the next couple of weeks. Well, I think you've got to give everyone the benefit of the doubt and kind of let him kind of bed himself into the job and see what he can do. But for me, as far as I'm concerned, he needs to win us over rather than us give him the benefit of the doubt. But there we go. A massive thank you to Derek Ballantyne, who won James McFadden's signed boots in the podcast Bookazine draw. He donated them back to the to the podcast, and we did a second draw this evening, which was won by Ian Manderson. Congratulations to Ian, and hopefully in the next couple of days we'll get in contact with you and you can pick up your boots. You can maybe even wear them to Seven Asides if you play on a Thursday night. The sales have been going very, very well in the last week or so. We've been really, really delighted with how things are going. We still need an extra push to get us to our target. We will get there. We've confirmed even more fantastic names over the last couple of days. Guys like Stephen Cragan, Kevin Twaddle, Louis Moll, James McFadden, Keith Lasley, Tommy Coyne, Willie Pettigrew. The list goes on, and really we're working as hard as we possibly can to make a success of it. You're also going to get articles from the calibre of writers like Jay, Buster, Joe McKelvey. I actually can't think what more I would want to spend £8 on, guys.
Is it only £8?
Yeah, exactly. From now on, it's going to be £16. The Bookazine engagement officer has decided. But yeah, thank you very much for supporting it. We really, really appreciate it. It's for a fantastic cause, a very special young girl. We're very proud of our efforts, and we're delighted that folk actually take the time of day to support us as well. I think that's about all we've got for this week, yeah?
I think we've covered quite a lot, eh?
Ah, well, I'm the host, so I can get to decide anyway, don't I?
Maybe.
Joe, I think it's about time that we just actually invite you to be the honorary fourth member of the podcast, because to be perfectly honest, you're on it more than some of us are.
It's been that way this season, yeah.
Busta, welcome back, mate. It's been much appreciated, your time.
That's no problem. You know, I like to waste my time doing this on a Monday evening, so thanks.
Jay, it was a bit more intimate last week, but I've still enjoyed arguing with you this week.
Cheers.
You've been listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back next Monday. Until then, thank you and goodbye.